Chapter 11. The black sedan was a short distance behind me, and I tried to decide if I was still just being paranoid after the tense interaction with Owen McElfrish. We'd left each other on good terms, and he didn't know that I wasn't about to do business with him again. There'd be no reason to follow me. Owen had started to ask a lot of questions, though, and I started to second-guess myself. I needed to figure out if the sedan had just happened to make the same turns, or if I was actually being followed. There was a trick I'd seen in spy movies, and I wondered if it would work. I made a left turn and watched what happened. A hot moment later, I saw the sedan take the same turn in the rearview mirror. The black sedan did keep some distance, but I really had no idea if someone would follow closely or not. I figured if I tailed someone, I would want to keep some distance if I didn't want them to notice. So I made two more lefts, and then a right-hand turn and watched as the sedan followed me. The streets weren't completely deserted, but the traffic was still pretty light in the city, and I was sure it was the same black sedan. I was certain I was being followed now, and I had no idea how to lose a tail. I guess I hadn't paid enough attention to that part in spy movies. I drove toward a more populated part of the city, so the traffic would make it harder for the sedan to follow me. As the traffic started to get heavier, I changed lanes at random, took turns for no reason, and tried to speed up when I didn't see the sedan right away. And when I got back onto a busy street again, I looked into the rearview mirror, and I still didn't see the black sedan. What the fuck? Had they given up, or had I just lost them? I continued to drive for a little while to make sure the black car was gone, but when I did turn toward home, I took a roundabout route just in case they showed up again. I wonder who'd been in the sedan. I'd assumed it was McElfrish or Ricky, but I couldn't be sure. Then it occurred to me that it could have been Brock or one of his security buddies. Stanton would be pretty mad after his last scheme had backfired on him, and I wouldn't put something like that past him. The type A nut job liked to intimidate people, and I could see how he'd try a stunt like that. It was a good thing I'd brought the Glock with me. I felt a little better with the knowledge that it was within arm's reach if I needed it, but I still kept an eye on the rearview mirror on my way home. When I finally got home, it was almost 4 in the morning, so I silently went into the trailer and locked the door behind me. Then I was finally able to fall into bed and cuddle up to my wife's. I was dead tired after the long day and slept in the next morning. By the time I woke up, it was 11, and all the women were already awake and dressed. I headed into the bathroom to grab a quick shower and clean myself up, but as I brushed my teeth, I sent a text to Meyer to let him know about the stuff I had sold to Owen. "Hey, Meyer, sold some more things to McElfrish. There should be a transfer for $3.5 million coming in the next few days. Please let me know when you receive it." I wondered if I should tell my lawyer about the fact I wouldn't do business with the Irishman again, or about the black sedan. McElfrish and I were both Travis's clients, so I didn't know if it was right to put the lawyer in the middle of it. I decided not to say anything, unless it became a problem. I couldn't even say for sure that the car that had followed me was the Irishman's, so I tried to put it all out of my head and focus on the task at hand. Igerg, the bandit warlord, was the next thing to deal with on my list. I went out into the kitchen and found a fresh brewed pot of coffee. That was definitely Ibsith. My elven wife had probably heard me in the shower and started a new pot. The white-haired woman took such good care of me. I poured myself a cup and went into the living room, but the women weren't in there. I found them in the backyard as Amrila Nilame helped Ibsith plant the last of her new flowers. Then my phone dinged with a text alert, and I looked down at the display and saw it was Travis.
"Very good. I'll have Alice let you know as soon as it comes through.
I also want to make an offer on the house on the other side of me." I texted back, "The woman who lives there is interested in selling to me."
"Looks like I have my work cut out for me. I'll have some papers written up,"
Travis wrote. I put my phone back in my pocket and walked up to where the women were busy with their gardening. "Looks great, ladies," I smiled. "We'll have to give some thought to what we'll plant in the spring."
"Good morning, my king."
My white-haired wife grinned when she saw me. Ibsith was in one of my old flannels she'd tied at her tiny waist and tight high-waisted jeans that hugged her full curves. The elven woman looked fucking amazing in my shirt and filled it out way better than I ever could. Amrila and Ibsith both came up for a good morning kiss, half covered in dirt, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw Nilame as she watched us with a strange expression on her beautiful face. I hoped that soon I'd be giving her a kiss every morning, too, and I suspected she felt the same way. Amrila had on another black, crop-top hoodie and tight black leggings that she rolled down to show off her flat stomach. Nyleme was also covered in dirt and wore some of Ibsith's floral leggings and a little t-shirt. Because both of my wives were smaller than her, I guess it was hard to find anything that would fit her. But since Ibsith was so curvy, some of her stretchier clothes worked. I'd have to take Nyleme clothes shopping the next time she came up with us. I'm thinking it's time for another trip, I told the ladies in a quiet voice, and I looked over at the lilac bushes to let them know I meant the gloom. I couldn't hear any of the neighbors in their backyards, but I still wanted to be careful about what I said, just in case.
Aww,
Ibsith sighed.
I've been having such a lovely time with you home, but still, you must do what needs to be done.
We'll try to be back as soon as we can, I assured my first wife. I'm sure none of us want to draw this out. I'm going to head into town to pick up a couple more things, but while I'm gone, can you all get everything ready?
Of course, partner.
Amrila nodded.
I'll see to it. Are we leaving tonight?
Yeah, I said as I looked again at the bushes. I want to take care of this so we can get to our real goal.
I'll lend a hand too,
Nyleme said with her eyes still on me.
But I'll admit I'll be sorry to leave this all behind.
It won't be the last time,
Ibsith replied with a mysterious smile.
You are welcome to come and stay as long as you'd like.
At least my elven wife had learned some subtlety since Amrila first came home with me. The white-haired woman had started in on the new wife talk that same night, and I'd been worried the horned woman would run for the hills. But to be fair, I didn't know a whole lot about the culture in the gloom. Maybe short courtships were common down there. I put on my boots and left for a quick run to Walmart. My mama had taught me to never go anywhere empty-handed, and I liked to bring gifts with me when I went into the gloom, even if it was just something small. I picked up some more tea for Scourge, since the Zinkari man really seemed to like the little tea bags last time. I grabbed a couple of different flavors of one of the nicer brands on display, and then I went on to the toy department. I knew Bakoff had a little boy and that the general had asked me to have dinner with his family a few times, and as I looked at the rows upon rows of toys and shiny packaging, I wondered what would be the best thing to buy for a young night elf. My initial thought was to get something battery-operated. It would seem like magic to a kid in the gloom. But batteries would eventually run out, and the toy wouldn't seem as fun then. As I walked further down the aisle, I saw action figures and superhero costumes that I didn't think would have the same value to a boy who'd never heard of Superman. But then I saw it, a giant display of Legos. I went over and looked at the sets they had and found a castle set with a knight and a dragon. It was perfect. I'd always loved Legos as a kid and had a lot of fond memories of sitting on the carpet with my dad. We would follow the instructions to build a set until we eventually just made whatever we wanted. But I also knew the instructions were mostly pictures, so Bakov's boy wouldn't have any trouble with it. I smiled at the image of the boy building his castle. I'd forgotten how fun it was to pick out toys. I also stopped by the stuffed animals, since the Mohawked warrior told me he had another kid on the way. I'd expected mostly teddy bears, lambs, and fluffy bunnies, but the stuffed animal game had apparently changed a lot since I was a kid. Among the cutesy animals I'd expected, there were also monsters, dragons, and unicorns as far as the eyes could see. I picked up a beautiful stuffed griffin, and I figured it would work for a girl or a boy. Then, as I looked at it, I thought about the night around the campfire when Bora had told our fortunes. The hot orc woman told Bakoff he'd have a few girls before another boy, and I laughed to myself as I considered putting the griffin back for a pink unicorn. Then again, Bora's prediction for me had been pretty dark, and I still wasn't sure if I was sold on how reliable fortune tellers were. There were plenty of frauds on the surface who claimed to be able to speak to ghosts or tell the future, so I stuck with the cool griffin. It seemed like a safe choice. Next, I got a case of beer for the dwarves, but I was stumped about what I could get for Ekname. The Dolrath chief had made me a shield brother to the tribe, and it felt right to get her a thank you gift. I thought about a bottle of wine, but anything I could pick up at Walmart didn't seem appropriate. Maybe the liquor store on the way home would have something more top shelf. I paid for my stuff and then headed to the liquor store to see what I could find. I'd never gotten a bottle of anything over $30 if I treated myself, and in college we would all just pitch in for a big bottle of Captain Morgan or Jim Beam. But I figured there'd be something worthwhile around the $50 mark or above, so I went into the store and didn't bother to look around the shelves because I knew all the good stuff would be behind the counter. The clerk was a bored young woman with black hair and lime-green bangs, and I wondered if the emo girl was even old enough to legally work there. The woman had thick, black, winged eyeliner and was one of the palest human beings I'd ever seen.
Can I help you?
Lime Bangs asked in a disinterested tone.
Yeah, I replied with a smile I knew would be lost on the clerk. Could you recommend a good brand of bourbon? The black-haired woman shrugged, and I assumed that was a no, so I was on my own. I looked at the shelves behind the clerk and picked out the bottle I thought looked the nicest. What about the bottle of Calumet Farms 12-year-old black bourbon? I asked as I pointed. How much is that? The young woman sighed as she got up to get the bottle I pointed at. Clearly, I'd interrupted her staring off into the distance as she contemplated the darkness in her soul.
$98.99.
The clerk said as she stared at me from under her overdrawn eyebrows. That's good, I nodded. I'll take that. You know what? I'll take two. Once I'd paid, I drove the Jeep back home, and I spent the rest of the afternoon with Nyla May and my wives. Then, as the sun began to set, I put the gifts in a spare bag and then started to check on my Galil and Glock. Nyla May checked her AK as well while I had all the stuff out. Since Amrila had already packed up our usual supplies, the Horned Woman and Ibsith were out in the backyard to spend some time together before we left, and I had a rare moment alone with the dark-haired elf. I'm really glad you came with us, I said as I checked the barrel for dirt or obstructions. I think the ladies have enjoyed having you here too, especially Ibsith.
I'm also glad I came.
Nyla May smiled at me.
What you're building here is very special. I had no idea that life could be so pleasant.
You know, you could stay if you wanted to, I said as I glanced over at the dark-haired woman. Nyla May looked up at me with a surprised expression and then opened her mouth as if she were about to say something, but no words came out. Instead, we stared into each other's eyes for a moment, and there was an electric pull between us like a magnet. I leaned toward her, and I gently put my hand on the side of the Dolrath woman's beautiful face as I drew her close. There was an undeniable spark as our lips met for a second time, but instead of a quick peck, this kiss lingered, and something began to smolder deep within me. Nyla May's lips parted slightly, and I softly probed the inside of her wet mouth with my tongue. Then I felt the dark-haired woman's tongue began to move against mine, and suddenly my boxers grew tighter. I would have liked to have taken her back into the bedroom right then, but it had started to get late. The sun would set fully soon, and it would be time to head back into the gloom.
Oh, Eddie.
Nyla May purred as we pulled away.
I keep waiting to wake up from this wonderful dream.
I promise it's not a dream. I grinned, and I'll prove it to you once we have a little spare time.
I would like that,
she said as she blushed. The Dolrath princess and I finished cleaning our guns and double-checked that we had everything in working order.
My love, will you take the trash to the curb before you go?
Ibsith asked as she came into the house.
I'm not sure what I threw away, but the smell is really bothering me when I'm outside in the yard.
Sure, baby. I smiled and was glad I hadn't changed into the Dolrath clothing and my breastplate yet. I went out to the backyard as Amrila and Nyla May changed into their armor in the house. It felt strange and kind of funny to perform such a mundane, everyday task before I went to go take care of an orc warlord, but I grabbed the trash can, went through the side gate, and wheeled the big green bin to the curb. I wondered what Ibsith was talking about, because I couldn't smell anything beyond the typical, mild smell of the trash can. But then the thought was pushed from my mind when I casually looked toward the street at the end of the cul-de-sac and saw a familiar pair of headlights. A black sedan slowly made a circuit around the far side of the cul-de-sac and then passed right in front of me. The windows were almost blacked out with tint, and I couldn't see inside, so I just looked at the car with a neutral expression as they passed and then drove back out of the cul-de-sac. I stared hard at the license plate and memorized the number, HCV 2056. As they turned left onto the street, I ran into the house and locked the door as I repeated the number in my head and quickly wrote it down on a spare piece of junk mail.
Eddie?
Ibsith asked in a slightly confused tone.
What's the matter? You seem pale.
I think I just saw the car that was following me when I was in Cleveland, I said as I peeked out of the curtain and waited to see if the sedan came back.
Why would someone follow you?
The white-haired woman asked with a concerned frown. That's a really good question, baby, I replied as I covertly watched out the window. I'm not quite sure yet. Amrila, Nyla May, and I delayed leaving for the gloom for an hour as we took turns to watch out the window. I also took the time to check out the old high-point pistol and made sure it was loaded in case Ibsith needed it. I'd taken her out shooting a few times, so I knew the elven woman could handle herself. But the black sedan didn't come back, and I guessed they'd accomplished whatever obscure goal they had. Still, I handed my first wife my old pistol
and look deep into her eyes. I want you to keep this in the nightstand at night and close at hand during the day. I told my elven wife in a firm voice, if you don't want to keep the magazine in it for safety reasons, that's fine. But just be sure you can put your hands on both of them if you need them. Don't be afraid to call Jack or Eartha either if that black car comes back. Jack Tynor was a retired police officer, and his wife absolutely loved Ibsith, so I knew they'd look after her while I was gone. I was also pretty sure Mr. Tynor still had friends on the force, so if anything happened, they'd be quick to get here and sort things out. It was still possible whoever was in the black sedan was just some asshole friend of Stanton, but even if it wasn't, someone would have to be real stupid to try anything in a cul-de-sac where all the houses pretty much faced each other and there were potential witnesses everywhere. The four of us walked out the back door, and the ladies all hugged each other and said their goodbyes to Ibsith. Then the white-haired woman turned to me with a radiant smile.
Be safe, my king.
She purred as she put a delicate hand on either side of my face and pulled me in for a long, wet kiss. As always, I felt the magnetic pull toward my first wife as our tongues met and moved against each other's. Her kisses and tender caresses were still like a drug to me, and my senses were filled with the scent of her hair and the way her velvet skin felt under my hands. I'll hurry back to you, baby. I rumbled as I came up for air. I love you.
And I love you, Eddie.
Ibsith breathed as she kissed me one last time. When my first wife and I finally managed to let go of one another, Amrila and Nylame and I all went into the lilac bushes and then down into the surface tunnels. Then the three of us made our way into the southern tunnel, where the lost dwarves lived in the ruins of the underground citadel, and I realized Nylame had never seen the old dwarven stronghold, as she looked around at the carvings in the walls of the corridors and the flagstone floors. As we passed through the blue-tiled hall that had once been a bathhouse, the dark-haired woman gasped.
This is incredible,
the Dolrath woman said as she touched the smooth tiles. This is one of my favorite rooms, I agreed as I looked at the large, echoing chamber with fresh eyes. The golden light of the strange dwarven lanterns glittered off the glossy tiles, and the deep blue was broken up here and there with designs of white and gold. The pool-sized, recessed tubs were empty, and I could see where there were benches and stairs built into the sides. I wondered what it would take to get this place into working order. I'd always wanted to try a hot spring and be fully immersed in warm water, like a hot tub but bigger. I could bring all the ladies here for an afternoon of soaking and relaxation. And the thought of Ibsith, Amrila, and Nylame all naked as they lounged around the steamy bathhouse was sexy as fuck. We made our way to the living quarters of the dwarves, but I was surprised to see only Sagor and Becklin at the workbenches. I knew there were other areas where the last of lost dwarves lived and did their work, but most of the time they could all be found in this main workroom. Sagor, the eldest dwarf, read from a large dusty old book at one table, while Tiny Becklin looked through a set of tired magnifying glasses as he worked on something small and fiddly with an expression of deep concentration. Evening, gentlemen, I said as the ladies and I came into the quiet room. Becklin jumped at the sudden sound and then had to fumble to catch whatever small, delicate item he'd been working on.
It's good to see you, Eddie,
the little red-headed man said breathlessly as he clutched the metallic object he'd nearly dropped.
And you brought beer?
I sure did, I chuckled as I lifted the case with one hand and set it on one of the work tables by the door. And I brought something else for you guys to look at. I fished the ring out of my pocket and held it out for Sagor and Becklin as they came over to see what I had. The smooth grayish stone was about the size of a nickel, and the older dwarf held out his hand for me to give him the ring. Once I handed it over, the gray-bearded dwarf took a long look at it and furrowed his brow. I think it might be cobaltite, I said as Sagor handed the ring to Becklin.
You might just be correct,
the oldest dwarf nodded.
It has the right coloration and striations,
Becklin agreed.
I would scrape off a sample to test it, but I suspect this ring has an enchantment on it of some kind, and I would hate to damage it.
An enchantment? I repeated with a sense of excitement. You mean it's magical?
Very likely,
the red-headed dwarf said as he took the ring over to his workbench and looked at it under his magnifying glass.
Cobaltite isn't the most attractive stone, so it's not often used in jewelry. We'll have to study this piece before we do anything rash, just to be sure we're not destroying something precious.
That makes sense, I nodded. Well, then it's a good thing I got this, too. I grinned as I pulled the bag of cobaltite the chief Murdrak of the Karardu had given to me out of my backpack and handed it over to Sagor. The elder dwarf opened the bag and looked into it, and then he glanced up at me with wide eyes.
"This is more than I've ever seen in a lifetime,"
the grey-haired man exclaimed.
"Really?"
Amrila asked as Sagor handed the bag to Becklin.
"Because Murdrak made it sound like it wasn't much. He said his supply has been cut off by a warlord in his eastern territory."
"We've been isolated for a long time,"
Becklin replied as he started to pour the cobaltite out and sort the pieces by size.
"Sagor and the rest of us grew up in these holds, so we do not remember a time when we could find materials in abundance. All we know are the old stories our elders told us before they passed."
"You have this to use now," I said as I watched Becklin touch and caress the valuable stones, "and I should be able to get you more."
"Thank you, Eddie,"
Sagor said with a smile on his wise old face.
"We should be able to make some very fine bullets with this, once we come to understand the process."
"Just be careful with it," I replied as I thought about what Murphy had said about the stones having trace amounts of arsenic. "I don't know what your ancestors wrote about them, but take any safety precautions they wrote about seriously. I was told the stones have arsenic in them, so make sure to protect yourselves."
"That is kind for you to be concerned for us,"
Becklin grinned up at me.
"Not all of our ancestors' wisdom was written down. Much of what was considered common knowledge to them was completely lost over time. But we'll be very careful."
I thanked Sagor and Becklin and told them to give the other dwarves my best, as we got ready to leave on the last leg of our journey to the Dolrath territory.
"Tell Dorum I said to wash his scraggly beard,"
Amrila said with a mischievous grin as we started to leave.
"Even in his absence, I can smell it."
"Of course, Amrila,"
Sagor answered with a hearty smile.
"I'm sure he'll have a steely retort ready for the next time he sees you."
Then the three of us left and went through the trap tunnels that led from the old dwarf citadel to the southern iron door. Amrila and I pointed out where the different traps had been triggered the first time we'd come through, and we also told Nyla May about the strange, musical puzzle trap that had nearly killed us. It was kind of funny now, since I had Sagor's ring that protected us from the traps. But I still remembered how tense the situation had been as I dragged Amrila past the flames of the trap. Once we were through the iron door, the three of us traveled through the Dolrath territory. This part of the gloom was relatively safe now. But even so, the chances of being attacked by some monster or strange animal was never zero in the underground world, so we all stayed on guard. The road that led past the western lake and then east to the encampment was quiet, though, and we made good time. When we finally reached the tent city, I could see the streets were as busy as ever. I loved how colorful and full of life the Dolrath city was, and I looked forward to the time when all of the gloom would enjoy the same kind of peace and prosperity.
"I should go see my mother and let her know I'm all right,"
Nyla May sighed with a heavy sense of duty.
"But I will meet you at Bakoth's tent as soon as I can."
"Sounds good." I nodded as I looked at the gorgeous dark-haired woman. "Should we come too and pay our respects? I'm never sure about the proper etiquette in these situations."
"It's fine,"
Nyla May giggled as she smiled at me.
"The Dolrath are practical people, and we rarely stand on ceremony. But it might be a good idea to say goodbye before we leave."
"Fair enough," I smiled at the princess. "I got this for your mother. It's called bourbon. We'll see you soon." I handed the dark-haired woman the bottle of 12-year-old booze, and there was a long moment as Nyla May and I looked at each other. I could feel the magnetic pull between us again. I guess neither of us knew whether we were at the point of a casual kiss goodbye, or if that would be appropriate here in the public streets of the Tent City.
"Well,"
the dark-haired woman said as she blushed,
"I will see you both soon."
Then she turned toward the meeting house, and I watched her round hips and ass as she walked away. Fuck, she was hot.
"If it were me,"
Amrila said in a bantering tone,
"I would have just kissed you. Let the whole world see my excellent taste in a man."
"You're one of the least shy people I've ever met," I chuckled. "Besides, she's the princess here. I'm sure there are a lot of reasons why she might show restraint."
"Restraint?"
the horned woman snorted.
"I'm glad I'm not a princess. It sounds so boring."
"What if I told you that you're a princess to me?" I teased the red-skinned woman as we started to walk through the city.
"I would gag,"
Amrila smirked.
"And once that had passed, I would throw you to the ground and show you how unladylike I could be. I would fuck you right in the middle of the street if I wanted to."
"Really?" I grinned and winked at her. "Remind me to try that sometime." I knew Bakoth lived in the northernmost part of the city, not far from the river, so we headed that way. As we drew closer to the water, the tents grew larger and more elaborate. I'd only been inside a couple of Dolrath tents, but I wondered again why they didn't just build permanent structures. The tavern I'd visited a couple of times had a wooden bar and large tent poles anchored into the stone ground. This pretense that the encampment could be uprooted and moved at any time was a strange, endearing quirk of the Dolrath.
"Eddie!" I heard Bakoth's voice call out. "And lovely Amrila, how are you both?"
I turned to see the fierce warrior in front of one of the large tents, and there was a small, night-elf boy on his shoulders. The small boy giggled, reached his arms around his father's face, and roughly pulled to one side. Bakoth let out a bark of laughter before he reached up and started to tickle the boy's sides until he let go, and then the red-headed man was able to set the boy on the ground. I smiled as I watched the father and son, and I felt a little jealous but also happy for my friend Bakoth. The boy started to run as soon as his feet hit the ground, and he ran so fast he had to skid to a halt just a couple feet in front of me.
"Are you Shield Brother Eddie?"
the child asked in a breathless voice. "Yes, I am," I smiled at Bakoth's son. The boy had Bakoth's red hair that fell in a tangle of curls around his shoulders and dark, almost black eyes.
"Are you really a vampire?"
the kid asked with bright, eager eyes. "No, buddy," I chuckled. "That's just a rumor someone started."
"Oh, hog's feet!"
The little boy sounded disappointed, but then his curious gaze jumped to my shoulder.
"Is that your rifle?"
"It is." I grinned and was enchanted by the kid's quick mind and enthusiasm. I got down on one knee, dropped the mag out of the galil, and removed the bullet from the chamber. Then I held the rifle so the boy could look at it as his father walked up to us. "If you look down this part, you'll see a red dot. When you aim the rifle, you make sure that dot is on what you want to hit, and you slowly pull this trigger back."
"Wow,"
the boy breathed as he looked through the sight.
"Is it really loud enough to deafen your enemies?"
"Yeah," I nodded, "for a little while at least. That's why I have these to wear over my ears."
"You're always so full of questions, Nimthok."
The Mohawk general smiled as he came up and ruffled the boy's hair. "Go tell your mothers we have guests for dinner."
"Yes, father,"
the boy said before he set off at a dead sprint back to the tent.
"He's a clever one,"
Bakoth said with pride in his voice.
"But he cannot stand still for more than a minute. How are you, my friends?"
"Very well,"
Amrila smiled.
"Your boy is a spitting image of you."
"He has his mother's eyes," the warrior laughed. "But there's no denying he is mine. Come, my wives have been eager to meet you."
Bakoth led us inside his home, and we stepped into a large sitting area with a round, low table and cushions for seats. The ground was covered with a lush carpet that had swirling designs woven into it, and I could hear the sounds of pots and pans on the other side of the thick, cloth wall as the general invited us to sit. Then two night elf women came around a wooden partition, and both carried trays filled with fruit and drinks. I was stunned when I saw Bakoth's wives. He'd always joked about their looks, even though he was obviously smitten with both women. But the two night elf women were drop-dead gorgeous. One was slender and lithe, and her sapphire blue silk dress hung off her slim shoulders with easy elegance. Her dark hair had streaks of silver that only added to her quiet dignity, and her delicate nose was slightly upturned. The other woman had lush, auburn hair and similar curvy figure to Ibsith, but just slightly plumper, and the voluptuous woman had some of the most amazing eyes I'd ever seen, surrounded by long, dark lashes. Bakoth's wives were smoking hot.
"Beloveds,"
Bakoth said with a fond smile,
"this is Shield Brother Eddie Hill and his wife, Shield Sister Amrila, and these are my amazing wives, Fika and Vialvi."
Fika was the slender, graceful woman, and Vialvi was the sultry one with the figure like Marilyn Monroe. Vialvi's lovely round stomach also showed she was in the late stages of pregnancy, and the plump woman rested a delicate hand protectively on her baby bump.
"Our home is honored by your presence,"
Fika said with a dainty smile as she served us goblets of wine. "Thank you, ma'am," I replied as I accepted a goblet from her.
"Bakoth speaks very highly of you both,"
Vialvi grinned as she placed the bowl of fruit on the table.
"He talks about you both all the time,"
Amrila smiled and took a sip of wine.
"It's very nice to finally meet you both."
"Dinner will be ready shortly,"
Fika said as she handed her husband his goblet.
"And then we can all finally get to know each other."
"It already smells divine, piglet."
The red-haired man smiled up at his wife. I guess the term piglet, or any comparison to a pig of any sort, didn't mean the same thing down here that it would on the surface. If someone compared a human woman to a pig, They'd probably get slapped, but Fika was all smiles. As the two Night Elf women left through the partition, I leaned forward toward Bokoth.
Your wives are really something,
I said. Thank you. The general sighed as he stared after them longingly.
They are the lights of my life.
I don't want to be rude, I said as I picked my words carefully. But I was under the impression they would be, well...
Ugly,
Amrila chimed in.
Whatever gave you that impression?
Bokoth laughed good-naturedly. Just the way you spoke of them, I guess. I replied and flushed a little with embarrassment. You're always going on about how one was as round as a melon and the other one had a nose of a hog.
But I love dew melons,
Bokoth said in a wistful voice.
They are sweet and ripe, and I find gloom hogs adorable, don't you? In all truth, an ugly, scarred old soldier like me is lucky to have married so well.
Oh, dear Bokoth,
Amrila replied as she lightly placed a sympathetic hand on the warrior's shoulder.
It's true. You are as ugly as a troll's arse.
The mohawked man looked at the horned woman for a moment of stunned silence, and I was quietly horrified for a moment until Bokoth's face broke into a wide grin.
Your tongue is as sharp as your blades, and I wouldn't have it any other way, Shield Sister.
He laughed heartily. Soon Nylamay showed up with Scourge in tow, and Bokoth and his wives graciously welcomed them. Scourge introduced himself as Scourge with a low bow, and Bokoth didn't even blink at the change. To their credit, Fika and Vile V didn't seem bothered at all by the extra guest and laid a small feast out on the table. As we all started to eat the delicious food and drink wine together, Nimthok came in and sat down next to his father for dinner.
Oh, Nemi,
the auburn-haired night elf woman said as she wrinkled her nose.
You smell of that dreadful ox, my darling. Go wash up first and then come back to the table.
So, it's you who's been watching over Gex for me.
The Zinkari man smiled at the boy.
Are you going to take him back?
Nimthok asked with a little quiver to his bottom lip. Scourge glanced at Bokoth before he answered and saw the stern look the general had on his face.
I'm afraid so, young master.
The dark-skinned man replied with an apologetic look.
But I have some business to do first. Would you be good enough to keep an eye on him just a little while longer?
Yes!
The red-haired boy grinned and then ran to wash up. That reminds me, I brought a couple of things. I pulled out the bourbon and the Lego set and handed them to Bokoth. The liquor's for you and your wives, and the blocks are for your son.
That is most kind of you,
the slender night elf woman said with a warm smile.
Piglet, would you be kind enough to get some fresh glasses?
The mohawked man asked as he looked at the bottle. The graceful woman left and came back with a tray of small cordial glasses. I helped Bokoth peel the foil off the top of the bottle to expose the cork and open it before I handed it back to our host so he could pour for everyone, except the pregnant Vilevi, who opted for some type of water or juice.
To a successful adventure,
the red-haired general said as he handed out the glasses.
To a successful adventure!
Everyone around the table saluted, and I smiled as I drank the rich, smoky bourbon surrounded by friends.